Have you ever had a moment when you knew you had talent and drive, but nobody would give you a chance? Did you give up or did you make a way out of no way? Well, today, News & Notes launches a new series called Great Expectations. You'll hear from people who expected and achieved greatness when other people didn't expect them to. Today, we've got two people to help us frame the conversation. One is Judge Lynn Toler of Television's Divorce Court. A former real-life judge, she's helped others and herself get through lots of adversity. So has Ellis Coase of Newsweek magazine. He's working on a new show called Against the Odds for Public Radio International. It's going to start airing this month on public radio stations across America. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So, Ellis, let's start with you. You grew up in the projects in Chicago. You have done so many things, traveled so many places. How did expectations, for better or worse, figure into your life?
Expectations were key. Let me just take a second to express just my horror at what's happening in Kenya right now. I was in Nairobi earlier this year and also last year, and it just so happens that the Kisumu, the area where Dingle comes from, is where Barack Obama's father came from, and it's just a tragic turn of events. But going to your question, in my own case, I was helped by so many people, most particularly by Gwendolyn Brooks, who was the poet laureate of Illinois at the time when I was coming up. And she discovered me, in a sense, and gave me the confidence to believe that I could be a professional writer.
She's one of my heroes. You know, I still cherish her poetry. How did you even meet her?
I met her, and I'll try to make this story very brief. I was this kind of rebellious high schooler and was rejecting the normal assignments. The teacher and my teacher and I agreed that I would write an essay on why there had been race riots that had torn up my community in Chicago, which turned into a 150-page manuscript before I got finished with it. I was 16 at the time. The teacher took the manuscript, said, I'm going to give you an A in the course, but I'm not capable of judging this. You need to send it to a professional. At that time, I'm a kid from the projects, didn't know any professionals, certainly no professional writers. She said, well, I'm taking a class with Gwendolyn Brooks. Why don't you send it to her? And what I found after a few months when Gwendolyn Brooks called me with it was that she was this angel, really, who made it her business to nurture young talent. And she invited me into her writers group, and she showed me that it was quite possible for a kid from the projects to believe of becoming a writer on a substantial scale.
Wow. Judge Toler, you have had also many different triumphs and challenges. Becoming a judge, triumph. Leading a successful television show, triumph. But you've also had triumphs that were more personal. Tell us a little bit about some of the challenges you faced growing up and how you overcame those.
Well, I would first like to say that some of those triumphs and the expectations that I have attained are a result of people who had already overachieved a bit. My mother, not unlike Ellis, was born in the south side of Chicago, very poor. My father was born in West Virginia, backwoods Bromwell poverty. Both of them were able to get beyond that, and he became a lawyer and she became a housewife. That was my initial triumph that occurred even before I was born. The difficulty was that my father was both psychotic and an alcoholic, which made growing up in that household extremely difficult. I had my own emotional issues beginning at the age of 9 when I had my first nervous breakdown. I went from there in almost agoraphobic nature to become someone on television, so it was a triumph over, for me personally, emotional difficulties, family dysfunction, and then on a political level, which was the last triumph that I think that I gained, was I was a 33-year-old mother of an 8-month-old running for election in a district where my opposing party outnumbered us 5-1, and no one thought I had an opportunity whatsoever to win, and I pulled off a 6-vote victory. So.
And that's how you became
a judge. I've had opportunity on many levels. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, Judge Toler, how a lot of people who are in the sciences talk about resilience in this very specific way, having to do with the ability not just to overcome, but to keep overcoming. What does resilience say to you about how people achieve, including people like yourself, who may get punched down and knocked down but still stand up?
My mother's favorite phrase is, keep coming. My mother was a woman who knew how to grind things out. She didn't have extraordinary talent. She didn't have an extraordinary intellect. She says this of herself, so I'm not speaking ill of her. But she has the ability to keep coming. And she taught me that despite whatever fears I might have, which was my great challenge, is that you get up the next day and you keep coming. And eventually, either opportunity will arise or you create one of your own just sheer effort.
Ellis, your series Against the Odds, by its very title, implies that people that you're going to talk to have the deck stacked against them.
Right.
What is it that you were really looking for when you set out to put together this series?
Well, first of all, I mean, I don't believe in the great man theory of history, that great people are born and then achieve greatness because they are destined to do that. I think things happen to people. So what I was looking at was opportunity, how it's created, how people take advantage of it, how people make it for themselves. And the pilot, which is being, as you mentioned, released now and is being aired in most stations across the country, it looks at a young fellow named Abbas Hassan Mohammed who fled Somalia when the war broke out in the early 90s, ended up in this wretched refugee camp in eastern Kenya where they didn't even have schools. They originally were taught by people drawing in the sand. Made it from there to Princeton University. And his story, I think, illustrates a lot of what we're trying to do, which is to look at people often from marginalized communities who have managed to accomplish extraordinary things.
Ellis, we actually have some clips from that piece. And here he and his family are in a camp in Kenya, and good fortune shines down.
The constant prodding worked. When Abbas and his younger brother took the test for the Kenya Certificate of Primary Education, they scored first and second highest of all those in Dadaab.
I got 502 points out of 700. My brother scored 508. I mean, that was not extraordinary compared to other parts of Kenya. Like, a kid is scoring 650, 640. But for a kid in a refugee camp who had to learn initially using Somali and then switch to English, that was extremely well.
Abbas's extremely good work was bolstered by extremely good luck. Just in time for him to attend high school, officials built one in the camp. His high test score assured him of a seat.
So he got a seat in high school, and what unfolded from there that got him to Princeton?
Well, first of all, let me just say that his getting a seat in high school was key because there are over, at that time, at the time he was there, there were over 200,000 young people in the camp. The high school had seats for about 30 people, 40 people. And if he did not go to high school, he would never have taken the exam. He managed to take this exam, and I have to say his father was a huge influence in his life. His father, who was not very well educated, just imbued in him this passion for education. But once he got into the high school, he studied. He even begged the people in care, which ran the camp, for a rechargeable lamp, which he turned on every night. The first time he turned it on, there's no electricity in the camp. The first time he turned it on, people gathered around to see what in the world was going on there. And this young man just studied his head out. And by the time that he was ready, that he took the exam, he was prepared for it. And then next thing he learned was that there was a person in the camp from Princeton who was looking for people who might be able to make it in America, told him that he had to take something called the SAT, which he had never heard of. He managed to get to Nairobi, flew on an airplane for the first time in his life, and took this strange test and did well enough on it so that he's now in Princeton.
Now, Judge Toler, when you listen to that kind of a story, there are a lot of things that people go through in the United States that are absolutely horrific. But there's a certain way in which we have assumptions about how American life can unfold. How does it strike you as somewhat different when you think about someone who has been a political refugee, who's lived in a camp, who's been exposed to the possibility of death? Or is it all the same struggle that we're in?
To some extent, it is all the same struggle. But I think here in America, we have such a sense of relative deprivation when we're in a circumstance where we see so much and don't have so much. And I used to train at-risk girls, and I used to talk to them every week. And it sort of seemed to a lot of them that they didn't understand the necessity of effort. They say, I don't have this. Here are my obstacles. Hence, I will not continue to strive. And what I used to tell them was that sometimes the difference between leading an ordinary and extraordinary life is simply a matter of effort. Not all the time, but some of the time. And if you do make that effort, things will change. And I think that here in America, there is so much opportunity that we gloss over and we don't really see it and understand it until we hear a story like that and think, given his odds, what am I not doing here when my odds are much less against me?
Ellis, it sounds like Judge Toler is almost saying that living in the land of plenty can make you feel like you have less just because we have so much here. Do you find that that's something that...
Well, I think that's true. I mean, I think there's a sense in which success is also relative. And if you are in, say, the kind of community I grew up in or some other so-called ghettos across America, you just sort of often have a sense that you just can't get to where other people are. But I think there's also something very common. I mean, we are in a global economy now. Even if you don't have electricity and don't have televisions, you're aware that there's a world out there of wealth and riches and opportunity. And for me, there are just some keys to some of these people that we will be profiling and that have allowed them to overcome what they overcame. And one is passion, which is very similar to what Judge Toler is talking about, just the passion to keep going, to keep moving, to feel passionate about something. But there are also a couple of other things that I would say are equally important. I mean, one is having some help, a patron, a guide, someone who recognizes that you have some ability and takes an interest in you. I don't think anyone I've profiled or that I've talked to has been able to make it without that element as well. And then, of course, there's the element of being prepared. You have to have some kind of preparation to take advantage of these opportunities.
Well, we are going to stay with you guys. We're going to keep this conversation going after a short break, so stick with us. I have been talking to Ellis Coase of Newsweek, and he's got a public radio international show, Against the Odds, also speaking with Judge Lynn Toler of TV's Divorce Court. I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. We are back and ready to talk more about overcoming odds, big and small, with Judge Lynn Toler of TV's Divorce Court and journalist Ellis Coase of Newsweek, and now the program Against the Odds with Public Radio International. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
So, Judge Toler, it sounds like you have a lot of experience in working with young women. You have a lot of experience in working with young people, period. How do you target a message of triumphing over the odds to younger people who may not have had as much life experience?
I think the first thing I do is talk to the errors, the common errors that I saw. The reason that I went to the high schools in the first place, actually went back to the junior highs, was once they were already in the courtroom with me, it was too late. Not too late, but very, very difficult. Three children, no high school diploma, and I wanted to get to them before the major mistakes were made. So what I needed to do, and what they do need, is a stable figure that will allow them to do the right thing on a daily basis or simply not do the wrong thing on a daily basis when they're getting all the wrong messages from the entire community around them about what to do. So it was more of a stabilizing factor in the beginning to help them avoid the difficult things or the wrong things, which are so easy and so much more fun to do.
What really reached a tough case? Someone who didn't want to listen to what you were saying but ultimately got it.
What reached a tough case? Consistency. I kept coming. I didn't show up every once in a while. I kept coming. I'd go over to their house. I would take them out. I kept coming, and I didn't have to. And that made them think, I am a value. I am worthwhile, which I found was a great problem, a self-esteem, especially with young African-American women in the socioeconomic class that I was dealing with.
Ellis, in your doc, Against the Odds, we're talking again about Abbas Hassan Muhammad, who really started out in this refugee situation. And you mentioned his father. Here's another clip from the documentary. The first voice we hear is of him and then his father.
What people normally do is they'll tie that umbilical cord with what they want their child to be passionate of in the future. If they want their child to like keeping animals, then they'll tie that onto an animal.
I decided that when a child is born in my family, instead of tying the umbilical cord to an animal, I tie it to a book, and then I would bury it near a school. A book and a pen. I did that for all of my children.
That ritual was just the beginning. Day after day, in talking to his children, Hassan Muhammad drove home the point, above all else, excel in school. The constant prodding worked. When Abbas and his younger brother took the test for the Kenya Certificate of Primary Education, they scored first and second highest.
So when you think, Ellis, about the taking this very traditional symbolic action of what you want for a child and applying it to the age of learning, what does that say to you about that father and his belief and his expectations for his children?
The father is an incredible man. I mean, I spent lots of time with him in the refugee camp in Kenya, and he is just a very powerful personality, a very strong figure. But part of his own background was that he came from a caste in Somalia that is looked down upon by the majority clan. And what he discovered is the only thing that allowed him to get ahead, and in his life getting ahead meant getting a small-time job as a government clerk, was to leave his village, go someplace where no one knew him, knew what tribe he was from, and get some education, because he would not have been allowed to get education where he came from. And that was the key lesson in his life for him, that education could allow you to get to a place where otherwise you could not get. And he beat this message literally into his children. He says at one point, during our interview, that he caned his son to stop him from playing sports to drive home the point that he needed to get an education. Now that's extreme, but he clearly put the idea in his children's heads that education was something they just had to become passionate about, and they did become passionate about it.
Judge Toler, I have to bring this up. We've had a lot of stories recently where people talk about physical discipline of kids. Is that the path that you have to go? It's a raging debate, and I want to at least share it with the listeners. What's your point of view?
I don't think anything is a have to. I mean, there are always different circumstances, and you have to deal with the child, their circumstances, and the issue. I personally got spanked. My kids did, rare but memorable, but the concern people have with spanking, and I will agree with this, is that most often when parents do spank, you find that they do so out of anger, and that is more assaultive than educational. And that is why I think that the decision to spank is such a huge one, because it's normally not done correctly because we don't have the emotional control to employ it correctly.
Well, Judge, we're about to wrap this up. That was a little digression into an important topic. If you had to sum up, no, I asked it, and it is important. It's been coming up a lot. But if you had to say one thing about how to reach people who may have given up in their lives, what would it be? Or to reach your heart if you've given up?
Listen. And find out what it is that will make them passionate, will make them care. And I think that's very much exemplified by the story that we've been told. You listen and you find out what they're missing and what they want, and you appeal to those things.
Ellis, any thoughts?
Well, I obviously agree with that. And I think that the key to the people that we've talked to has been that they have found themselves in a place where even if most people don't believe they can do something, and all the people we've talked to have faced that. They at least believe that they can, and that belief converts other people ultimately into believers as well.
Well, Ellis, Judge Toler, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Ellis Coase of Newsweek and the Public Radio International show Against the Odds joined us from NPR's New York Bureau. And Judge Lynn Toler presides over television's divorce court. She joined us from Great Scott Productions in Phoenix, Arizona.